One of the differences between syndicators and a lot of other businesses that, you know, I'm doing my best to bridge this gap as well, is other businesses invest in their businesses and their market much more heavily.
Right? Hey there, I am Dr. Jason Ballara, and this is the Know Your Why podcast, where we explore the why behind success. Every week, I meet with real estate investors, veterinary entrepreneurs, mindset coaches, authors, and fitness professionals to uncover their why and how it drives them on the winding road to success. What is your why?
Hi, everyone. I'm Jason Ballara, and this is the Know Your Why podcast. Today, I am excited to be here with Yaakov Smart. Yaakov, I know him because he is the creator of the Investor Attraction Academy, also author of a number of books, and with another one coming out that I know we're going to talk about called Attracting Investors. But Yaakov, I want to say, first of all, thank you for coming on the show. Thanks for taking the time out today. I'm super excited for this conversation.
Thank you for having me, Jason. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. Well, why don't we start with just your background. Tell people a bit about yourself, your story, how we got here, and then we'll just kind of go and dive in from there.
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, it's a question that has so many different roads, directions, nuances. I'll say at this point, I'm someone who, and I talk about this in the book as well, who's very much a researcher, right? And what I mean by that isn't that I'm necessarily sitting in a lab, you know, doing like weird science experiments. I look at life as doing research, right? And not even as doing research, but as being the researcher, right? You know, going about my life, creating life in a way where I can live with intentionality and alignment, and also be wildly playful, right? And so kind of live in that creative flow. So that's been a really big thing for me. A couple of things about my story that might interest people. So I came over to the US when I was less than 2 years old, came over from the former Soviet Union, from a country called Lithuania, grew up in Atlanta, Georgia. And growing up, I always, there was a couple things that somehow innately I just knew. I just knew them. I can't explain it. One thing was that I didn't like living in Georgia, that I wouldn't be living there too much longer. That was one thing that was very clear. But I also knew that I was a little different. For whatever reason, I was interested in business and entrepreneurship, and also exploring communication with people. Right? I had a fascination with that, being able to communicate more effectively, understand myself, and also to be able to just use my imagination, create things. For example, I always knew that I'd be writing books and sharing. Didn't know podcasts weren't a thing when I was a kid, but if they were, I'm sure I would have known that I would have had podcasts and been on shows like this. But at this point, yeah, you know, done some things that we can talk about. We can talk about Investor Attraction Academy, the different books, different work we do. You know, we talk about alternative investing and capital raising and online marketing. At the end of the day, though, it's research, and it's being able to, I guess, know myself and also understand how this wonderfully weird world works.
Yeah. I think that, like, being an entrepreneur, I think that like I was a little bit different as a child. Like, I think that's a very probably common theme, even if it's not always recognized, right? Like, I feel like a lot of people, you don't just wake up in your 40s and suddenly have this entire shift to being an entrepreneur. You may take action on it at that point, but I feel like probably people have some level of background that led them down that way of thinking, that, you know, like, hey, maybe I don't want to do what's normal or what's expected of me. I might like to do things a little bit differently. So I think that's probably a shared feeling. So, I mean, let's talk about, you know, the Investor Attraction Academy first. Let's just kind of go through what was your idea behind starting that. Tell people a little bit about it in case they're interested. Give a little background there.
It's like a lot of great ideas. They just come out organically, right? It wasn't, you know, I didn't sit there. I think if people are listening to this and they want to start a business or they're looking at business ideas, I think the idea of a business plan is just silly, right? I don't think there's ever any way to predict it perfectly. Like, stuff is going to happen. You'll learn through doing a lot of the times, right? So for me, you know, I got into the online space in 2014, 2015. My very first online product was a ebook for college students. So it was called Get College Right. And that was about getting college right. And the brilliant business idea was to sell a ton of copies and make buckets of money to college students. It was not the best idea, but you know what? Learned a lot about online marketing and communities and all those different things. And then throughout the years, worked with a number of different business owners, teaching them lead generation strategies, marketing, all these different things. Became a student of marketing as well. And then Investor Attraction Academy really first started to come about 2020, 2021, when I realized that, you know, the world of passive investing is a very niched world, right? You know, there's very specific people who are syndicators, fund managers, who even invest passively at this point. And people inside that world don't really recognize that outside of that world, there's not a lot of awareness around it. Right? I would even say there's more awareness around crypto right now than real estate syndication. I don't know if you'd agree with me on that, yeah. But it's crazy when we put it that way, right? So to me, it's taking these marketing strategies, skills, systems, tools, resources that I've developed and personally implemented over the years and sharing them with people, right? Allowing people to get a head start, get the system set up. And also, I think it comes down to this idea, and we talk about this in the book, of wealth leadership, right? You know, because I believe the reason investors invest is there's a level of trust, right? They want that leadership. They want someone that they can look to when it comes to not even specifically just real estate investing, but passive investing in general, right? Because money is still such a sensitive topic, right? I think money is probably still the most taboo topic with a lot of people that just doesn't get talked about much, right? And so when it comes to investing money, there's all sorts of mindset, there's all sorts of conditioning that people have, no matter how wealthy they are, right? Or maybe they're wealthy, they don't know they're wealthy, or maybe their money is sitting under a mattress, right? And they're, you know, needing to invest it. So there's so much education to be done. And so where I see the gap and where Investor Attraction Academy fills the gap is showing people how to A, become more attractive to their ideal investors, and B, really step into that area of wealth leadership, where they're going to be able to attract those investors, put themselves out there online, reach those people, and do it in a way where everyone wins. That's really, really important. Because I think what happened in the alternative investing space and the real estate syndication space was in, you know, the late 2010s, for whatever reason, I think it was capital raising was different, right? You know, people would build these lists, they put a deal out there, and they would very much be brokers, where they would just like put deals in front of people, raise money, you know, get their stake. And more recently, it's become that much more about building trust, right? And overcoming skepticism. And also, you know, bridging the gap between this world of passive investing and ideal passive investors, because they just don't know, right? You talk to someone who's an accredited investor, where do you invest? If they're a little bit more of a do-it-yourselfer, right? Maybe they have a stock trading account, maybe they do crypto, right? Or maybe they want to sit there and like flip houses, or, you know, do little real estate projects on the side. But I think really it comes down to almost being like a matchmaker between these two groups of people, right? These passive investors and these people who are out there raising capital, offering opportunities, and showing these people who are raising capital, offering opportunities, how to attract those investors, how to communicate, how to convey value, and how to do that at scale as well. Because I think scale is a word that often scares people, right? Because like the word scale, it's one thing to go to a networking event and talk to five people and have one invest and feel good about it. It's another thing to, you know, build a system and build a real business around it, right? And so that's where sometimes people don't think in terms of that leverage. And so we want to make sure that they're thinking about it the right way and implementing the right tools to start to create that.
Yeah. I think one thing you said that I've never heard this before, and I think you're so right, but just the comment about probably more people know about investing in crypto than they do investing in syndication, which is
crazy,
like,
right?
To me, that's insanity, right? Like when you say it that way, I'm like, yeah, that's just total craziness, because like everybody knows what real estate is. What, like, show me some Bitcoin, put it in your hand. You know what I mean? And it's, and I don't invest in crypto because I don't understand it. And that's fine that maybe some people do. I'm not saying don't invest in crypto, but it's shocking to me that people will do that. There's no SEC regulation around investing in crypto like there is for real estate investing, right? It's like there's just all of this it's a just a weird I don't know, abyss where people could be dumping money, maybe not in their best interest, but you definitely talk a lot about, you know, kind of the, as marketing being education, educating, and you know, sort of, as you said, bridging that gap between the syndicators, the people that have the deals, and then the passive investors, and becoming more attractive to them. And I guess I would, I mean, tell me what you think. I think a lot of the techniques that you describe probably could be used in not just in capital raising, but like in business in general, generating leads, that kind of thing, at the niche level for whatever it is. Do you feel like those are pretty, maybe not universal exactly, but the concepts are fairly similar?
Yeah. So I feel like the principles are going to be applicable across the board, right? What's that book by Ray Dalio, Principles, the book that I haven't read, but it's very popular, right? So, yeah. You know, there's principles, there's fundamentals to human nature, to psychology, to how people are going to interact with a platform online that's relevant. If it's a little different, you know, if you're selling trinkets online, little widgets, that's different. I've never played in that space, but everything that's like more high ticket service based, it's absolutely similar. I think with crypto too, as you were talking, one of the differences between syndicators and a lot of other businesses that, you know, I'm doing my best to bridge this gap as well, is other businesses invest in their businesses and their marketing much more heavily, right? So with crypto, the place where the Lakers play, they renamed it. I don't know what the name is now, but, you know, well, you're in LA. Yeah. Crypto.com Arena, right?
Yeah.
It used to be the Staples Center. It's like, what? Right. It's named Crypto.com Arena. There's no XYZ Capital Fund Arena. That ain't coming, right? So I see a lot of capital raisers who want to also be penny pinchers, which to me, I think being attractive to an investor is behaving like you'd want your investors to behave, right? So we talk about the mirror effect, right? Which gets talked about in all sorts of spiritual principles, the golden rule. And I remember reading about this in a Frederick Dodson book, talking about like, if you'd like to attract something, be it first, right? And I thought that was brilliant. Mm-hmm. So with capital raisers and syndicators, what a lot of them are doing is saying, hey, I want investors who can write big checks and write big checks fast. But they're being cheap with their marketing. They're not investing a dime in their business. They're overthinking everything. They're taking forever to make decisions. They're certainly not, you know, thinking at scale in terms of sponsoring things like these crypto companies are, even running ads or anything like that. And they wonder why they're having a hard time, right? So it's one of those things. I think that marketing is something that's very much a contact sport, right? You know, it's about implementation, getting data, refining things, right? It's not about, you know, and this is for the people who are maybe out there trying to raise money and they're newer to entrepreneurship. You know, it's not about just posting something on social once in a while and hoping that people find it. You know? So it's I feel like a lot of capital raisers think of the acquisition side as a business, right? And put money in that and underwriting. But when it comes to the marketing, capital raising, they don't quite understand that it's, you know, you're essentially creating a marketing machine to really do that at scale.
Yeah. And the capital raising landscape is drastically different than it was 2-3 years ago. It was like 2-3 years ago, suddenly syndication was everywhere. It was hot. We were in a super, you know, hot market. Everything was going great. And then things stopped going great. And this is just, I mean, it kind of goes back to that quote about from Warren Buffett about, you know, being greedy when others are fearful and fearful when they're greedy. So many people were getting into syndication and investing and all of that. And now everybody, not everybody, I mean, some people are still doing, but like a lot of people have pulled back, sitting on the sidelines. And that's now you can use that quote to apply to your marketing efforts, right? Like when it's easy to, we need to be greedy in our marketing, I guess, while people are fearful. But again, it's just letting people know what's there and educating and explaining too. I think just like everybody was happy and excited about investing in syndication 2-3 years ago, and now they're afraid of it. But like the reality is probably now's the time to be investing rather than 2 or 3 years ago, right? Like you can, these cycles happen throughout history and it's for whatever reason, we still don't learn. We get excited when things are hot and then don't do anything. And it's just, I think people recognizing that and as entrepreneurs and business owners and capital raisers, like explaining those concepts. Do you feel, you said it's a contact sport, do you feel that the marketing and capital raising is very much education based? Like if you had to rank, you know, sort of the components of a marketing strategy, what would you say is, you know, most important? And I'm not saying people should pick one, because I agree with you. Yeah. We have to kind of invest in the overall scheme, but how do you kind of prioritize what you think when you're, what you approach a marketing campaign?
Yeah. So I think, you know, you said a couple of really great things there. I think it comes down to paradigm shifts, which I'll explain in a second. But you said something really interesting. You said that, you know, 2-3 years ago, people were hot to trot and happy, and now there's a lot more hesitation. It's a very general statement. It may be true for some people, but I would say it would be fascinating if we could, let's say there's 10 million accredited investors, right? And if people are doing 506Bs, people don't even need to be accredited. But I'd be so curious what percentage of those accredited investors have actually invested passively in a real estate deal. I bet you it's a pretty small percentage. It's a lot smaller than people think. Yeah. So I feel like a lot of capital raisers and syndicators live in this bubble, which is easy to live because where all they know are other capital raisers and syndicators and fund managers. Mm-hmm. And that's the stigma. Oh yeah, people are more skeptical, less excited. When in reality, that same level of excitement, if someone has no idea what a syndication is and you're telling them they can make mailbox money, it's still pretty exciting. You're telling them they can get some tax benefits. Yeah. Pretty exciting stuff, right? Now you may have to address, you know, the paradigm. Hey, you know, if it's a quote unquote recession, how do you look at investing strategy? You may have to educate past that a little bit. But I think the excitement for the most part is still there. People still want to make money, right? People still want to pay less in taxes. Mm-hmm. People still want to grow wealth. People still want more freedom. So I don't think that's changed or it's ever going to change, right? But it's about being a little bit more, just framing it a little bit differently. And that's where paradigm shifts come in, right? So I believe that any problem that someone has, on pretty much any level, this is maybe a controversial thing to say, but pretty much on any level is a result of a mishap in thinking or being bought into a paradigm that's not serving them, right? So you can take any issue. The key to solving that issue oftentimes starts with a paradigm shift, right? So what, for example, the paradigm could be, hey, if the economy is not great, I shouldn't be investing. I should hold on to cash, right? The paradigm shift is, well, guess what? The inflation rate is this amount. And now is actually the best time to invest that there might be in a long, long time, right? That's the paradigm shift. So to me, marketing is leading people, right? Marketing and leadership can be interchangeable in this category, leading people to that paradigm shift, right? You know, can be through a social media post, an email you write, a webinar, you know, whatever the case may be, doing a live stream, whatever the case may be, that's one of those paradigm shifts, right? And if you can shift enough paradigms, inevitably people are going to take action, right? Inevitably. So to me, that's really important. There's actually a chapter in the Attracting Investors book that's called Why Educating Investors is Overrated. Something like that. Maybe the headline is a little more clever, but something like that. And it talks about, like, you know, I see so many people trying to put out quote unquote educational content that's very generic, right? It's very generic, very data driven. Time and a place for that, really valid. But if someone's of the wrong paradigm, they're going to ignore the content. They're not going to really see it and understand it, right? So shifting the paradigms first, and this is for anything, right? This is for, you know, if you've got kids and you want to have your kids, you know, adopt a different behavior, clean their rooms or whatever you want your kids to do, there's a paradigm shift, right? There's a mental block, a different way of outlook that needs to be upgraded. And in terms of communicating, it's leading someone to that paradigm shift, whether that's even one-on-one or one-to-many, which is my personal favorite because there's a lot of leverage in that.
Yeah. Yeah. As you were saying that, I was thinking that yes, we need, you know, we have to try and help with paradigm shifts with the investors, the passive investors. But in reality, you could argue that same thing needs to happen or has happened with the actual capital raisers, right? Because 100%. It's real easy for me to say, it's a hard time to raise capital right now because of X, Y, and Z. And so what am I going to, like, I'm just going to use that. Like, my paradigm is we can't raise capital right now, but sort of switching that narrative to, hey, maybe because a bunch of people have pulled back, it actually should be a better time to raise capital. And now people that are going to, you know, get in at this point are going to have better opportunities than people that got in 2 years ago. And it's just, I think, recognizing that. And even as you were saying it, I was just kind of thinking in my head, I'm like, yeah, I need to stop thinking that it's hard to raise capital and even within my own paradigm and say, look, like, maybe it's just different, right? It's just a different approach to it or different mindset towards it.
Yeah, 100%. You know, and any capital raising problem can be solved through a paradigm shift, right? So if someone, for example, is spending whatever amount on advertising and it's working or not working, it could be, well, what's the paradigm shift, right? Do you know how to evaluate ads, right? What's the actual funnel? There's so many nuances, right? And so it comes down to having that level of, what's the word I'm looking for? Just understanding, right? And at a high level, it comes down to strategy, right? So paradigm shift. And this is where it can be very difficult if you don't have the experience, especially like with something like marketing. There's so many nuances, right? To go out there and execute effectively. So this is where, you know, I'm in favor, and not always. Some people really don't need guidance or coaching if they, you know, if they're not implementing anything, right? Or if they're not really like serious about like doing anything, right? Then I don't know that they need it. But if they're actually, and I'm not going to use the word in the trenches, I'm saying in the playground or at the gymnasium or wherever on the court, right? If they're in the game, there we go. If they're actually in the game, then that's where there's leverage in getting other people's guidance, right? Even with peers, even other capital raisers, right? Okay, what's working for them? What's not working for them? How do they see things, right? But the risk in that is they could all have the same paradigm. You know what I mean? So it's like it's finding people who have different paradigms that are more evolved on that specific topic, right? And that's why I think, you know, specialized knowledge is so key. And then to me, the level of wisdom that's a little bit higher is just understanding the practicality and all the different angles and like, you know, the different if-whens and like, okay, where does this fit into the bigger picture? There's so many nuances, right? To me, it's very interesting because when I started in marketing, like I said, 2014, 2015-ish, I would read a lot of marketing books and I would like try to like get marketing, right? And then after a while, and now I don't really read marketing books because it just... marketing is marketing, you know. Maybe I'd pick up a book on a new social media platform that came out if I wanted to start to educate myself. But if I understand human nature and the principles, that can just be applied on the platform, right? And so this is where I think a lot of people really get into the shiny objects, like, oh, this is new platform is the next hot thing. Okay, but if you don't understand the principles and the strategies, well, then you're not going to be able to fully utilize that new platform. It'll just be frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely easy to get, you know, sort of that shiny object syndrome and think, well, maybe it, you know, doesn't work here. Maybe it'll work over here. I'll try here now. And it's, I think it's about sticking with that strategy long enough. And as you said, sort of reevaluating what's working, what's not working and implementing change where needed. You just mentioned something that I did want to ask you. People always talk about the algorithm, right? No matter what platform it's on, it's like, yeah. Oh, the algorithm wants this. And you've said it as well. And how do, this might be a stupid question. How do you know what the algorithm wants? Like, how do you, without having someone else tell me, I don't know how to know what the algorithm wants. Like, how do you, is there a place to find that information? Like how, or just like,
unfortunately, there's not.
Yeah, right.
I assume the algorithm dictionary. Maybe that's exactly. A good business idea. Charge people a membership and update it. But you don't know the algorithm unless you're on the inside scoop of the company, right? So yeah. Like if you take a platform like LinkedIn or Facebook, unless you're working with them, and even then, algorithm is proprietary. I think you look at data over time. But I think there's a hyper focus for finding that algorithm, then it trickles down, people start talking about it. To me, the most important algorithm is my email marketing. Like, I care about that more. Like, are my emails getting open, right? Than who's seeing it on social media, right? And there's basic rules. There's basic things just not to do. Like, you don't want to put a link inside the post. Like, that's just a a thing that ruins the algorithm. And so the way of thinking behind the algorithm, though, is these companies make money by keeping people on the platform longer, right? So it's like they're selling something very addictive, actually. It's very interesting, right? So I remember there was a movie that came out a few years ago called The Social Dilemma. I don't know if you've seen it. It created a lot of buzz.
I know of it. But, yeah.
People got very upset about it, but I was thinking, why are they so surprised? It makes perfect sense. Like these companies, the longer you spend time there, the more they can get ads in front of you, the more they can monetize, right? So of course, it's in their best interest to make the platform as addictive as humanly possible, right? It's just like a potato chip. They want to make it addictive. You know, they don't want to make you feel good and nutritious. They want you to just eat more, right? The same thing with these platforms. So these algorithms try to determine what are you going to get addicted to, right? So when you say it like that, and we drop the connotation, it's like, okay, well, the more time, if you can put stuff out there that gets people to spend more time on the platform, read the post, engage, comment, the algorithm deems it, okay, it's going to be more addictive content. And now rinse and repeat, right? That's a very simplistic version, but I wouldn't worry about the algorithms as much as the experience, right? Because anytime we're running an ad, posting on social media, we can put ourselves in the shoes of the user, making a web page, right? And like, okay, if I'm the user and I see that without overthinking, how am I going to engage, right? So if I see a big block of text, am I going to be less or more tempted to read it? Less tempted, right? Because it feels overwhelming. Versus if I see like a catchy headline, oh, now I'm like, okay, can't help myself, right? So that is, I don't know if that answers your question, but it's a very, it's kind of the baseline. That at the very, and then algorithm updates, you know, see what's in your feed, right? That's one thing that always helps me. It's like, okay, if I spend 10 minutes scrolling through the feed, what's getting put in front of me, right? What style of media, for example, what's happening, right? So, but again, the algorithm is constantly changing, evolving. I think if you're speaking to a specific audience, it makes it easier on any algorithm.
Yeah. That makes sense. I hadn't thought about it that way, but yeah, I guess you're if you have, you know, very targeted niche for your content, then it's likely to be more likely to be shown to them. So that does make a lot of sense. Good to know. I think you did answer the question. I guess that I was really wondering, is there like some secret place that some people have a list of things that make the algorithm happy and other, but I mean, ultimately it's going to be about, you know, kind of interesting content when it comes to social media. Anyway, your email list, you said, is your kind of most important piece. And I've heard you talk about it. I've heard other people talk about it where that's the thing that, you know, kind of can't get taken away from you. It can't be, I guess it can be bought, but it can't be, you know, turned off. It can't, you've got your list and you work from there. What do you recommend people do to sort of create that list, or how do you, I know this is probably a pretty broad question and a lot about what, you know, I'm sure your book and the Investor Attraction Academy is, but do you have some like basic tips for people who are trying to build an email list and get it started?
Yeah, so there's a lot there. Again, identify who do you want on the list, right? Because not all email lists are created equal, especially if you're like raising money, you've got a high ticket kind of service. You want ideally people on the list who have the means or the capability to invest, right? Versus people who are just like dabblers online. Now, you're not going to segment it perfectly, but it's good to have that intention out there. Creating an email list, where to even start? I would say, first of all, having a software where you can house the lists, right? That's important, right?
Yeah.
Having that infrastructure in place, right? That type of CRM autoresponder sequence. And then picking, okay, what can you offer of value? Typically, you could say, hey, subscribe to our newsletter, get newsletter updates, it's free. It's not that juicy these days, right? It's like what happens oftentimes is you have a lead magnet, you know, something free. It could be a webinar, a cheat sheet, all these different things. I think they can get for free if they just enter their name and email, right? And then that starts the relationship. Right? I think the same thing with text messaging too. You know, someone can get on a text list to get updates, right? So having something of value. And then for building, there's so many things people can do. And they can get on podcasts, they can post on social media, they can do, so many things. They can sponsor, they can run ads. I think the first 1,000 people is the hardest to build, actually. Maybe even the first 100, as interesting as that is, right? Because that's the initial, getting the traffic, getting the initial eyeballs, right? But the first email list I ever built, actually, when I did that book with the Get College Right book, what I would do, people could still do this actually in a way. What I would do, I got into all these like college groups of college students. This was on Facebook back in the day. And I was just like, okay, there's these groups based on universities, right? There's these active groups of people like who are going to be freshmen. And I would post in the groups these blogs that I'd read on my website. And I'd say, hey, 10 things to do about this thing, right? And I'd post these blogs. And then people would go to the blogs. And from the blogs, there was a little opt-in. And they would go to, get something for free. I got, 30 or 40 people on the list. And then it was time to sell the book. I was so excited. I was like, I'm going to send some emails. In retrospect, I could have sent more emails. But I sent 2 emails. 2 people bought. It was a $20 book. But I felt like, this was a big deal. And it was at the time. Because these people didn't know me before then. And these were college students who invested $20 in a book. So point being, it's pick a couple of traffic sources. Offer something for free. Have the list set up. And then just start building the list. You can always update and upgrade, your funnel, your follow-up emails. There's always room to upgrade that. You can have a 100-step sequence if you want. But it's like, can we get people to give their information willingly in exchange for something? If you can do that, then you've started building a list. And also, you probably have people that you know through your community, in person, colleagues, people in your cell phone. If you've got 100 contacts in your phone, you've got an email list, Just don't be clumsy about just like mass subscribing them. And like, there's some clumsy ways to do it, but you've got a contact list, right? Offer them something. And if they want to be on the email list, they can. So the email list is simply a database. It's like having an asset, right? It's like you own that asset versus your social media account. Those companies own the social media account. That's why if someone has 100,000 followers on social, that's great. But if that account gets shadow banned, they're kind of screwed. Versus if they have 100,000 people on an email list, that's one of the closest things to printing money potentially that someone can do.
Yeah. And I think the theme I picked up through all of that is we've got to provide value. There has to be some reason, whether it's social media or an email list, a newsletter, whatever it is, has to be some reason that people want to open them, want to view our posts, all of that. So figuring out where to provide that value and which I think again points to that concept of staying in your niche, because there's no thing that's going to be like valuable to every single person around. So it's kind of like, and this is why I think some people like to make controversial posts on social, because whatever it is, you're grabbing attention, whether they like it or don't like it, there's some reaction that is created. But I would guess you would maybe agree with this, but that you wouldn't want to have that same strategy in your email list. You're not going for controversy once they've already signed up with you.
Why not? Yeah, you could. Not every time, but I actually think controversy is value. It's one way of giving value. Because think about this, it's gonna sound crazy, but if you send an email to someone and they get triggered and they write you a nasty email back, probably not going to buy from you, but you certainly have their attention. And you've given them value because they got to get triggered. It's not conscious, but it's subconscious value, right? So it's a very esoteric way of looking at it. Again, I wouldn't write controversial emails all the time, but I think it's valuable also if people can like feel seen, heard, and understood. That's a great way of giving value. So you say something controversial, they secretly agree with it, they feel validated, you've now given someone value, right? So giving value doesn't have to be providing people a ton of information. Giving value is writing a entertaining email headline and telling a story that makes them laugh. That's valuable, right? And then also reminding them what you do, what you're offering, there's value there, right? So I think the bar is low for value, for what value is, right? Because if someone goes to see a Hollywood movie, right, there's value, they're paying for it. Whether they like the movie, don't like the movie, you could say they're getting some value. So I don't know, Jason, like, what's your definition of giving someone value? Because it's one of those things, like, yeah. I think it's so misunderstood.
As you were saying that, I'm like, yeah, I don't know. That's the thing, is I don't know. You know, people, we talk about this, like, all over the real estate space and capital raising, provide value when you're partnering someone, provide value when you're, yeah, it's like this is the catchphrase. And at the end of the day, like, I don't think that's very easy to define. Like, I don't, and value to one person versus another person is very, very different. And it's, you know, it seems like people, we want someone else, we don't want to have to tell them what provides us value. We want them to figure it out and then come to us with that value. And like, and I hear people describe that, and it's like, you know, well, because then you're asking them to waste their time and giving them a job to tell you what they need. And I get all of it. I understand the different perceptions and different sides of that. But at the end of the day, like, it makes it very hard for someone to decide what defines value. And it's funny. We were just the other day talking about, like, like, my by far my best, most viewed social media post ever was a video of me sitting outside with a screwdriver on my AC condenser because it was broken, and I literally was bored and picked up my phone and just, like, took a little 6-second video of that. I can't tell you how many people, like, commented on that, because like people that were like, you're an idiot, you shouldn't be doing this, you need an AC guy, and all of this. It's like, but there was no effort into that, like, literally no effort. I just had one free hand and one hand that had to hold this switch in with a screwdriver. And it was like, it's been viewed 100+ thousand times. And I'm like, I don't know why. I don't know what, and for some people, that's not a lot. I understand that. But like, for me, that's many, many times more than my posts often get viewed. And I'm just like, so it's like, defining what provides value and what's entertaining is, like, nearly impossible, which almost points to the, like, the reason why, like, some people say, like, just volume, right? Like, sometimes people point to it needing to be volume because something will hit in there. I don't know. I'm intrigued what you think about that, because it's like, you know, you do a lot to put a lot of work into some of those posts and may or may not do anything. And then this one was, like, literally just a silly thing that I was bored and happened to have my phone in my pocket. Like, it's just, I don't know exactly how to explain that. Like, I don't know if you have
someone got value. It's hilarious. Right. They got value of being a smart ass and telling you that you shouldn't be doing that. They got value, right?
Right. Right. Yeah.
Which is funny. So to me, I mean, value is different. It's relative for different people. I think, and this is where the psychology piece comes in, right? Because, you know, there's value on a conscious level. There's value on a subconscious level, right? It's just like, it makes me think of relationships, right? I read this wonderful book a while ago called The Honeymoon Effect, which I think it's by Bruce Lipton. And he was talking about how a lot of people who are dating, or, you know, who are in a relationship, you ask them what they want, right? And they'll tell you, they'll have a long list, something perfect on paper. They keep attracting things that are like the complete opposite of that. It's like, well, why is that? Because subconsciously they want different things. Maybe they want to feel like they're not good enough, right? So not consciously, but subconsciously, right? So with value, it's very subjective, but I will say, you know, objectively speaking, time, money, energy, right? You know, if you save people time, it's value. Most people want more time. You go in a room of 100 people, you ask them who wants more time, most of them would say yes, right? You go in a room of 100 people who wants more money, most of them would say yes, right? Or maybe if money is just not an issue at all, maybe they want places to put their money, right? To invest their money, donate their money, right? And then energy, people want to feel alive, I believe, right? You know, people want to feel important, feel seen, heard, understood, right? So those are three currencies there. People also want to learn things, right? But I think that's also subjective, because some people love learning trivia and, like, fun facts and cool stuff. So other people want to learn things that are more practical, right? Like, my personal take on that is, unless I'm genuinely invested in something, I don't want to really learn about it. Like, I don't care about trivia, but I care about, okay, where can, what's in it for me? Where does this provide value, right? People want experiences. That's value as well. But I think that when in doubt, the seen, heard, understood piece is really, really important, right? Because that's valuable to people who doesn't want that. On a subconscious level, we all do, because that's human. So that is, I don't think, again, there's a one-size-fits-all approach to it. To me, it's also valuable to streamline things for people, but that comes down to saving time, right? It's valuable to communicate. Those are the ways that there's actually a chapter in the book, Five Streams of Value, when it comes to like investor relations, investor journeys. And I believe we've rattled off most of them, but I believe, like you said, if you're stacking these different streams of value, that's really the most powerful, because different people are going to, you know, it's like the love languages, right? People have different love languages. Yeah. People have different, you know, ways that they buy and make decisions, right? And unless you're talking to someone one-on-one, and even then, sometimes it becomes difficult to know unless you really know that person. So in terms of marketing and social media content, you want to appeal to as many of those streams of value as you can.
Yeah, when you have that many different opportunities to provide value, maybe it gets a little bit overwhelming, like a you know, decision fatigue sort of thing. Like, so would you suggest people have to pick what, you know, pick their, as well as their niche for that they're marketing to, but would you suggest like you pick your niche of where I think I can provide the most value, and like pick one or two of those options?
Yeah, certainly. It's like where they feel like they have a level of relatability and credibility. I feel like that's very important. And also, I believe that people who give the most value, let's look at celebrities, for example. Let's look at athletes, actors, actresses. A lot of their value just comes from showing up. And, you know, they're very good at a few things, and they're being rewarded tremendously, making millions of dollars doing that. So there's also intrinsic value that you have to hold yourself to and just say, okay, by me putting attention and presence on this thing, I'm adding value. By me having a relationship with this person, I'm contributing value. By allowing this person to do business with me, contributing value, right? And it's where some people might hear that and might object to that and say that sounds arrogant or it sounds entitled, but is it though? It's not. It's a layer of confidence, and it's a level of trusting yourself, right? So, and then on a more tactical level, you can reverse engineer this. You can have a checklist. If you know the streams of value in your marketing, you know, if you're posting three times a week, for example, you can say, okay, this post is giving these two streams of value. Awesome. This next post is going to go to give these other streams, and you keep putting stuff out there. Same thing with your email marketing, right? People respond to different things. And even if something's perceived to be less valuable, you're still getting in front of people, which is really what it comes down to, you know, that repetition, that consistency, them knowing who you are and having that familiarity.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's all very fascinating stuff. People certainly should check out the book. And I'm going to switch gears here, Jakob, because I don't want to take up your entire day, but I wanted to get to ask you the questions I ask every guest. First one, of course, is related to the name of the show, being Know Your Why. So what is your why? What drives you, you know, kind of continuing down the road of success and keeps you motivated?
Yeah. So it's a question that for a while I didn't really understand. You know, it's a question that, you know, I'm sure you've, what's his name? Simon Sinek talks about find your why. Which I think is a great concept. I think it's something worth contemplating for anyone. And to me, initially when I heard it, I just kind of rolled my eyes. That was a little cliche. It's like, well, you know your why. Okay. Well, yeah. What if people don't know their why? Where is the why going to come from? Right. How do you know your why? Which is actually kind of a weird, like, how do you figure out your why? It's a very, there's a rabbit hole there. So to me, it's evolved. I'd say at this point, it's there's certainly a level of curiosity, self-discovery, creating greatness, right? And also the journey, right? That's a big part of it. And to me, it's also a big part of it. And this is not as philosophical, but it's just like enjoying and playing, you know. It's like, mm-hmm. it's like, why not? Like, why not get to create things and play and just have like tons of fun? And really, I like to push boundaries, not in a way where it's disrespectful or like just, you know, what's the word I'm looking for, where it's just like, what's the word, it slips my mind, not in a way where it's like controversial, like, you know, like, or like reckless, like, you know, I'm gonna go do drugs or like, you know, break the law or do anything stupid like that. But it's more like pushing boundaries with myself. Hey, if I really would like this thing, is this possible? Or where can I sweeten this up? Or like, hey, I had a limiting belief around that, and I shattered that belief through action, through shifting my paradigm. Right? So I enjoy the implementation on that. That's the why. That makes me feel alive, is like learning, discovering through action, through learning from others, and then actually implementing and like creating really cool stuff.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Tell us something about yourself that isn't common knowledge, a special skill, a hobby, anything that you're comfortable kind of sharing, letting people know you better.
It isn't common knowledge. So many things. I don't know who's listening, what common knowledge is, what common knowledge isn't. It's all,
it's very subjective.
It is. So I often enjoy, I like hiking, right? But that's not that interesting. What's interesting is when I go hiking, what I realized recently is like, I like the meditation on top of the mountain and standing there or sitting there and just like feeling the breeze much more than the actual hike itself. So, and I like the meditative process of hiking and breathing. The actual hiking itself, like some people like to go on these like really long endurance hikes. I don't really do it for exercise. I do it for that meditative process. And sometimes, you know, just like I can sit there for an hour and just stare into space, empty mind, and sometimes creative downloads will come. So that's, to me, it's fascinating. I made that distinction recently.
That's got to be some sort of metaphor for life in general, right? I love hiking, but
we could go down the rabbit hole.
That's right. there's a lot there, but that could be another hour long discussion. When people hear this and they want to reach out to you, what's the best way?
There's a lot of ways. I'm on LinkedIn, findmoreinvestors.com/webinar. They can find out more. And if they've got other projects, other things, yeah, just reach out on LinkedIn or, you know, findmoreinvestors.com/webinar, specifically for those who are looking to find investors, raising capital.
Perfect. We'll put those things in the show notes. Final question for you, Yaakov. What piece of advice would you give to someone who wants to get started? You take it down the capital raising like space or just marketing in general, but someone who hears this, they're inspired and they're thinking, okay, well, that sounds good. I want to get in on that. Like, what would you tell them as sort of some first steps?
I would say minimize the time to execution. That'd be the first step. You probably, if you make a list of all the things that you think you'll need to do or all the things that you'll need, probably 90% of the things on that list, you don't actually need to get started. Maybe 99% of those things, right? And that's the trap, right, of overcomplexity, right? Because if they want to get into marketing, capital raising, you know, it comes down to, okay, people, talking to people, and then figuring out which skills to learn, which skills to master, where to get additional guidance. But again, the implementation, it's like, you know, you get a big box delivered to your door, right? And you want to, if you don't know what's in the box, what do you want to do? You want to open the box, right? You have no idea where this box came, but you want to open the box. If you sit there and speculate and journal about the box for weeks, and if you, you know, Google, I have a big box come to my door, what are the possibilities of being in it? You don't know until you open the box. So you open the box first, and then you figure out what you're going to do with it. You might even like what's in the box, right? Or you might love what's in the box and want to get 100 more of them. But if you haven't opened the box, you can't know. It's all speculative.
Yeah. I love that. I love the box analogy. I also love the concept, minimize the time to execution. I think it is, unfortunately, oftentimes people get caught up in that, you know, analysis paralysis and just don't take the action that they need to get started. So I think that's a phenomenal piece of advice. And with that, I will say thank you. Thank you for the time. Really appreciate you coming on the show. It's been awesome getting to talk to you. I just appreciate you sharing everything you did. I think people are going to get a lot of value that we talked about. They get a lot of value from this episode. So thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Folks listening, I do really think you're going to get a lot of value out of this episode. All jokes aside, please like, rate, and review the show so we can get more great guests like Yaakov. And thank you all for listening.
Hey there. I am Dr. Jason Ballara, and this is the Know Your Why podcast, where we explore the why behind success. Every week, I meet with real estate investors, veterinary entrepreneurs, mindset coaches, authors, and fitness professionals to uncover their why and how it drives them on the winding road to success. What is your why?